Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
They swore a pact to the devil. They said, "We will serve you if you'll get us free from the French." The devil said, "Okay, it's a deal." And they kicked the French out. But ever since, they have been cursed by one thing after the other.
You're dealing with a God who, judicially speaking, is a little crazy. This is like night court. He's just going and dismissing cases left and right.
What role does faith play in your life right now?
It's everything. It's everything. I mean, I grew up as a preacher's son. My father was a preacher for 50 years. Calling myself a God-fearing man, I got to read this book.
I guess you could say I got a little out of control. I dropped 400 grand on a bar mitzvah for my son. He's nine! And we're Lutherans!
It is a sad anniversary indeed. Every year that passes, now the 37th year, can you believe it, since 1973, when the U.S. Supreme Court decided that they could find in the Constitution, or perhaps more accurately, find around the Constitution, read into the Constitution, a right to privacy that would permit a woman, against all of previous jurisprudence in the United States, permit a woman the right to choose abortion legally. Roe v. Wade. 37 years later, the same logic still holds in laws being made about abortion. The same logic has to be overcome in laws that would restrict or regulate abortion in any way. Was Roe v. Wade good law to begin with? We're going to answer that question here in the first 10 minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Friday, January the 22nd. You can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at @IssuesETC. Hadley Arkus will join us here for the first 10 minutes. Then Maggie Carner will bring us a live update following the March for Life in Washington, D.C. She's there. Pastor Matt Harrison, live from Haiti, will bring us an update on relief efforts there after the earthquake. And then we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at @IssuesETC. Dr. Hadley Arkus is a regular guest. He's professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College in Massachusetts, author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Hadley, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back with you, Tom. But now, I'm coming back from the march, talking about the march. I'm driving back in Washington from the march. So this is the first time we've ever done an interview on wheels. So let's see how it goes.
We're very happy that you're willing to do us, even as you move down the highway. Was Roe v. Wade good law to begin with?
No, it was appalling law, but no, it was a very, very bad decision. But I don't take the line that other people take, because you can't find abortion mentioned anywhere in the Constitution or fetal life mentioned anywhere in the Constitution. I take a different angle on it. It's Byron White, one of the original dissenters in Roe versus Wade, said he too could possibly accept some version of Roe versus Wade, in which you were put on the same place as all those supposed rights that added up to it, such as the right to marry. So the right to marry never meant that the law could not make many serious restrictions on the freedom to marry, of the same age, gender, you know, consanguinity, species. If abortion were put on the same plane, it'd be, well, you may have a right to do that under circumstances under which it would be justified. And here, as in many cases, the court would have to just pivot its judgment, and have its judgment pivot on the question, when would it be justified to take the life of a human being, and what are the grounds on which we could claim that an offspring conceived by Homo sapiens can be anything other than human? It was just a deeply unreasonable decision in which the court never put to itself the most rudimentary questions that you'd have to put in things of this case of this kind. Like, what are the grounds on which you are making that remarkable presumption that this child in the womb is anything less than human? And if it is human, well, what are the grounds that you would ordinarily require for the taking of human life? And if a state is simply providing those protections, what possible grounds would one have for pronouncing those kinds of protections of human life to be illegitimate? So it's just the wrong at many levels. I heard a story that Jim Buckley, former senator from New York, was at a dinner with Potter Stewart, who was on the Supreme Court for Roe versus Wade, and he began to run through the level of development of the fetus. When is the fetus squinting? When are fingerprints and soul prints available? And Potter Stewart said, you're wrong. You can't be right. And it was evident that he never even considered these things, never thought it was apt to offer or invite evidence of this kind to be presented to the court.
So how did it come about? Was the case that poorly argued by those who wanted to restrict a woman's right to choose? Or was it just that the court was, I don't know, that poorly comprised, distracted? How did it come about, as far as you can tell?
And I guess I'd have to retreat to the what is called the zeitgeist, what the spirit running through this. People had absorbed some notion of, I think it was the notion of sexual freedom that gave rise to the notion of a right to contraception.
Hadley, you said we needed to kind of understand the zeitgeist surrounding the court at the time. I wonder, do people, legal scholars today, recognize that this was a poorly decided decision and yet kind of toss up their hands and say, well, but it's there. The court is not likely to overturn it anytime soon. We're stuck with it, as bad a decision as it was. What's the legal consensus on the worthiness of this decision itself in 1973?
Oh, and it's a remarkable combination of people saying no, it has, even liberals saying that no, this it had, you know, no plausibility as constitutional law, mainly because they didn't think you could find anything in the Constitution that would withdraw protections from the unborn child, or suggest that there was anything about the protection of nascent life that was at all illegitimate, since it had been part of a tradition going back many years to protect the, as James Wilson, one of our founders, said, the common law cast its protection over life in the womb from the first stirrings in the womb. Nothing novel about that. It was just so hard to claim that somehow this tradition in which it was thought reasonable to protect the child in the womb had suddenly become incompatible with the Constitution that never mentioned abortion anywhere in its text. I think that's one of the legal lines. Now, on the other hand, it's been remarkable as to how many professors are willing to say, yes, it was a mistake, as it had little plausibility as constitutional law, but it was the right decision. It's one of those things that have to be right for reasons we cannot quite explain. And I heard the report was offered to me by one colleague at a law school saying that his younger colleagues took the line that Roe versus Wade was now a touchstone, that any theory of law that gave the wrong outcome in Roe versus Wade had to be a wrong theory of constitutional law. It's a backwards thing. When you start with a result you wanted that you can't explain, and now this becomes the measure of other things in our law, which may explain just why our law has become so morally skewed. Somewhere along the way, we've lost the knack of deliberating about that central question about the gauging restrictions on freedom that are justified or unjustified. After all, your freedom to speak does not mean you're free to defame. You're free to make obscene phone calls. In other instances of life, we're able to reason about those grounds on which it's legitimate to restrict the freedom of people. But suddenly, on this question alone, as Justice White said, on this matter alone, quite in contradistinction to those other rights covered by the Supreme Court, like the right to marry, this right, this freedom, is subject to restriction at no level. At no level. We've seen things moving around the edge about the justification for confining abortions to hospitals and things of that sort. But we haven't yet, until the Born Alive Infants Protection Act in 2002, we haven't had any decision, no decision by a court that would actually establish, I guess maybe the decision on partial birth abortion might count that way, a decision that would establish the justification for putting restrictions on any particular abortion.
Dr. Hadley Arkus is professor of jurisprudence at Amherst College in Massachusetts. He's author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Hadley, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for taking time with us.
Thank you for having me in when I'm sort of sitting on the road, and I hope that this has been still come through somewhat coherently. Okay, thanks again, Todd, for inviting me in. Always good to be with you.
Happy to do it. When we come back, we'll talk about the March for Life in Washington, D.C. Pastor Matt Harrison will bring us up to date on relief efforts in Haiti, from Haiti. We'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in about 20 minutes. Stay tuned. The latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal is out. It contains an article I've written titled Legalism and License. How are these two really the same error? Find out with the latest Issues Etc. journal. You can also read about Pastor Brian Wolfmiller's journey from liberal Lutheranism and navel-gazing evangelicalism to the external promises of God in Holy Scripture. Get your copy of the latest Issues Etc. journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Mondays, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen.